Laudator Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to our half-hour English feature program. I'm Susie Hodges. These are the stories coming up on today's program. Papal pronouncements. Pope Benedict reaffirms his full and unquestionable solidarity with Jews and says he welcomes the news of the election of Metropolitan Kirill as the new patriarch of the Russian Orthodox Church. Remembering the poor. As the rich and powerful gather for the annual World Economic Forum at Davos, the Secretary General of Caritas Internationalis says the poor must not be forgotten in the current economic crisis. Inaction kills. Southern African bishops have urged regional leaders to stop supporting President Mugabe of Zimbabwe or accept complicity in a passive genocide. And Zimbabwean viewpoint. The head of the Zimbabwean Catholic Development Commission tells us more about the humanitarian plight of his compatriots. Pope Benedict has reaffirmed his full and unquestionable solidarity with Jews. Speaking at his Wednesday general audience, the Pope said the Holocaust should remain for all a warning against denial and reductionism. In other remarks, the Holy Father said he welcomed the election of Metropolitan Kirill as the new patriarch of the Russian Orthodox Church. Emma McCarthy picks up the story.
Mai più la violenza umili la dignità dell'uomo.
Speaking in Italian following his catechesis on St. Paul, Pope Benedict immediately addressed an issue that has been dominating international media this week. The Holy See's decision to lift the excommunication of four bishops from the fraternity of St. Pius X.
Nell'omelia pronunciata.
In the homily I pronounced at the outset of my pontificate, began the Pope, I affirmed that the call to unity is the explicit duty of a pastor. Moreover, he added, it is a qualifying aspect of the ministry of St. Peter's successor. Pope Benedict said that he arrived at his decision to lift the excommunication of the four prelates because they had made known to him on repeated occasions the suffering caused them by their situation.
Ho compiuto questo atto di paterna misericordia.
I decided to carry out this act out of paternal mercy, he said, adding that he hopes this gesture will lead to their commitment to realize full communion with the Church through their witness of fidelity to and full recognition of the magisterium and authority of the Pope and the Second Vatican Council.
In questi giorni, nei quali ricordiamo la Shoah,
Pope Benedict's thoughts then turned to the Shoah, the memorial of which was celebrated this week. He said, the memories and images of my many visits to Auschwitz come back to me in these days, a death camp in which blind, racial and religious hatred led to the ferocious extermination of millions of Jews and other innocent victims. Then the Pope firmly said, while I renew my affection for and complete solidarity with our brothers of the First Alliance, I urge that the memory of the Shoah leads humanity to reflect on the unforeseeable power of evil when it conquers the human heart. May the Shoah be a warning to all against oblivion, against denial or revisionism, because violence committed against any one single human being is violence against all humanity. No man is an island, he said, as a well-known poet once wrote. The Shoah teaches both new and older generations that only the tiring journey of listening and dialogue, of love and forgiveness, can lead the world's peoples, cultures and religions towards that desired goal of brotherhood and peace in truth.
Mai più la violenza umili la dignità dell'uomo.
Never again may violence humiliate the dignity of man.
Ho appreso con gioia la notizia dell'elezione del metropolita Kirill.
At the end of his audience, the Holy Father also greeted news of the election of the new Patriarch of Moscow and of all Russia, the Metropolitan of Smolensk and Kaliningrad, Kirill, evoking upon him and the entire Russian Orthodox Church the light of the Holy Spirit. I'm Emma McCarthy.
As God has shown us, pride turning stone to bread,
and so we all must lend a helping hand.
Fat cats having fun in the snow. That That's how some critics in the past have described the annual gathering of the world's top business leaders and politicians at the World Economic Forum in the Swiss resort of Davos. But this year, in the wake of the global financial crisis, the fat cats are looking decidedly leaner. And reports say the Davos Forum has lost a lot of its glitzy image, with a gloomy and chastened mood among its participants. Senior executives from some of the world's biggest banks, as well as 40 heads of state and government, a record number, have opened discussions on the theme, Shaping the Post-Crisis World. The agenda for this week is packed with discussions, not just on the ongoing economic crisis, but many other topics as well, including energy, poverty, war and conflict, climate change and free trade. Among the participants at the Davos Forum is Leslie-Ann Knight, Secretary General of Caritas Internationalis. She told me that although the forum is viewed as a gathering of the world's rich and powerful, she will be urging them not to forget the plight of the poor amid the current financial crisis. Let's hear what she has to say about this year's gathering. Chastened is the adjective I keep seeing being used to describe the mood at the Davos Forum this year in the wake of the global financial crisis. Do you think that's an accurate description? Is the mood somewhat chastened there?
I would say it probably is chastened. I think that's quite a good description for it, given that the current global economic crisis is bound to be dominating discussions, and people coming here to Davos know that. So I would agree with you on that one, yes.
I read that there are more than 40 heads of state and government attending this year's forum, which is double that it was last year. Do you see their presence as a recognition that in the wake of this global financial crisis, governments, perhaps, rather than bankers and big business, will be in the driving seat when it comes to trying to pull the world economy out of its current mess?
I would say that the fact that over 40 government heads of state and representatives are here is significant. However, I think it's not just governments, it's also businesses and people leading business who will be here. And they will need to bear in mind that it's a question for all of them of political will and setting priorities. And I think Davos is an opportunity for all of them coming together to examine perhaps their consciences and have the courage to act together accordingly rather than just for political expediency or short-term gain.
You talked there about people examining their consciences. Do you think there is a willingness to learn from past mistakes? Unregulated capitalism has certainly got a bad name now.
I think it's fair to say that the levels of conversation, the levels of debate, the topics that are on the agenda, which include climate change, HIV/AIDS, the issues of malaria, water, nutrition, with people who are leading experts and scientists in those fields, means that there is a concern that we are all part of the same humanity. And I think it's simply unacceptable, whether you're rich or poor, not to see our fellow human beings suffering and to do nothing about it. So I would be arguing that the opportunity to help someone in need is one of the most fulfilling things that we can do, and it's what makes us human. And I think governments and businesses would do well to bear this in mind. And particularly now, at this time of perhaps low morale, it can be helpful to consider those even worse off and what you can do for them. And my hope is that there will be that atmosphere here at Davos as well.
You're not worried that given this financial crisis, that governments and individuals would use it as an excuse to tighten their purse strings or worse still, perhaps cut back on their commitment to help and give aid to developing countries and the poor and needy in general?
I think, of course, governments, as we do too in our own charity sector, need to keep our strategies constantly under review to ensure that they are effective. But I don't necessarily think the economic crisis will change what they are doing although it will clearly have an impact on resources. But I think the key message will continue to be that global poverty and the fact that in the year 2009 we still have such suffering in the world as a result of poverty is appalling, and the international community will need to make a much greater effort. So there is this concern. For example, as Caritas Internationalis, last year at Davos, we had the Millennium Development Goals very much on the agenda. And I would be concerned that they would be being shelved for perhaps the duration of the economic recession. So I think it's continuing to put on the agenda, particularly to the politicians, that ending global poverty is, you know, it's not a luxury, it's a duty. Climate change, too, will be another important issue that we will need to discuss at Davos. And in that light, too, to ensure that the interests of the poor and those most affected will be given highest priority.
So what specific message, as Secretary General of Caritas Internationalis, are you bringing to this year's forum?
I think this economic crisis gives us an opportunity, whether we are politicians, whether we are business people, or whether we are representatives here at Davos of the church communities and international non-governmental organizations, to rethink how we live. And the message that I'm bringing very much to Davos is, can we use the space here to reflect on whether richer countries really need the levels of consumption they have enjoyed in recent years, and whether unfettered greed is the only way to encourage economic growth and development. I would also be hugely encouraged if I see any signs of the commitment we had just a year ago, say, to the Millennium Development Goals has survived this economic recession. And even if there is minimal support for the idea that richer nations might restrain their levels of consumption for the benefit of poorer developing nations, that for me would be a key message that we would have been able to get across, and it would be a major achievement of this World Economic Forum this year in 2009.
I was speaking there to the Secretary General of Caritas Internationalis, Leslie Ann Knight, who is attending the Davos Forum. The Catholic bishops of Southern Africa have called for the immediate resignation of President Mugabe of Zimbabwe and accused regional governments of being complicit in the nation's passive genocide if they continue with inaction. In a strong statement, the bishops urged the Southern African leaders to stop supporting and giving credibility to what they called the illegitimate Mugabe regime with immediate effect. The prelate said, failing this, the regional leaders accept complicity in creating the conditions that have resulted in starvation, displacement, disease and death for ordinary Zimbabweans. This, they said, is nothing short of passive genocide. The president of the Southern African Catholic Bishops' Conference is Archbishop Buti Thigali, and he told my colleague Ema McCarthy why they felt compelled to issue such a strong statement.
Bishops sought in the statement they released, sought to encourage the leaders particularly that they should lean on President Robert Mugabe to resign and retire. He has been long in the job and he's already at 84 years old. And thirdly, he's really a stumbling block to progress being made. And secondly, we are saying that to the SADC leaders, that it is really up to them to take the initiative and bring about change in Zimbabwe. If they are not doing so, if they don't do so, there is a passive genocide that will begin to develop in that country. Already we heard from our colleagues, the fellow bishops in Zimbabwe, telling us that graveyards are filling up by the day. People die because of lack of medication, especially those who suffer from HIV/AIDS. People are literally starving. There's no food, especially in the countryside. So we are dealing here with passive genocide. And then we feel if SADC leadership does not respond to this gruesome situation of the ordinary people, then they too have blood dripping from their hands. And therefore, it is up to them to lean on Mugabe to leave office and at the same time begin to prepare for elections in Zimbabwe. This is basically the message we're trying to put across. We are also saying that, you know, the mediation has failed dismally under the leadership of former President Mbeki. The mediation has failed, and therefore it is up to SADC to try and set up a government there. We read the news that they have put some deadlines in terms of the swearing in of the prime minister, the deputy prime minister, etc. And then the ministry, the controversial Ministry of Home Affairs, will be under the leadership of both parties. We don't think there is anything new here. We doubt if this is going to be final. And therefore, SADC needs to keep on being told. The public need to insist, NGOs need to insist that SADC takes a far more stronger leadership on the matter of Zimbabwe.
Archbishop Tagale, if I may, this statement is an extremely strong statement, perhaps the strongest we have seen yet from the Southern African Catholic Bishops Conference to date regarding the crisis in Zimbabwe. What propelled you and your fellow bishops to release this strong statement? Because at the bottom of it is really human suffering. What is the latest news that you have had from your brother bishops in the region?
It is precisely that human suffering, that people are unable to buy food, that people simply have to live on water, that you can't get money from the bank, that you now have to use foreign currency, and ordinary people do not have foreign currency to buy anything. It is the fact, as I said, it now appears to be a passive genocide, that people are dying in great numbers, something which should not be happening at all. And this is a man-made crisis, which is now actually a disaster. It is this, the level of suffering of very ordinary people who are caught up in this political game because President Mugabe has become an absolute dictator in that country. It is because of this human suffering, this pain of ordinary people that has pushed the bishops to issue that statement.
Archbishop Tagale, how difficult is it to get aid to the people in Zimbabwe? How difficult is it to get food and medicines into the country?
We are told that it is very difficult because if you transport food in big trucks, visible trucks, the government confiscates it and we're told the army takes it. So you have a practical problem at the borders when you have huge amount of stuff. You need permission and you can stay for days on end at the border waiting for that permission to be granted. If you go in, the food might be confiscated. So they were telling us in order to get food there, you'd have to send it in small packets, in cars, etc., but nothing very visible because it's likely to be confiscated. So that makes it extremely difficult for people to carry food and medication over. But I think it still does go in reasonable amount.
And what about the thousands of Zimbabweans who are fleeing the country? Are they being welcomed? Are they being received by the neighboring nations? Or are the neighboring nations hostile to the influx of Zimbabwean refugees?
Well, I certainly know about Botswana and South Africa, where we have great numbers of refugees. One of the things we were also discussing yesterday is that we should not only be concerned about Zimbabweans in Zimbabwe, but ought to be concerned about Zimbabweans in South Africa, who actually they too are just experiencing enormous difficulties for lack of shelter, lack of food, lack of clothes, lack of money, etc., because of lack of employment. So they too, even though they are here in huge numbers, do not get food and whatever their needs are not met as much as they would like. In terms of reception, last year, of course, we have this xenophobic attack on foreign nationals in South Africa, but that has calmed down and we are not experiencing any of the xenophobia. But still, we are saying to the churches that they should be able to collect food to be given to foreign nationals at churches.
In your first answer, you spoke about this infamous Home Affairs Ministry in Zimbabwe, because we know that part of the agreement for the Government of National Unity was, from the opposition's point of view and from the government's point of view, a contentious issue was this Home Affairs Ministry.
The Home Affairs Ministry is contentious because the police fall under that ministry. That's the nub of the issue. And the control of the police, whereas I think the MDC is quite happy to let the army, being under President Mugabe, they thought if they controlled the strong ministry like Home Affairs, then they too would be able to control the police. But if you're going to bring stability and peace in Zimbabwe, it is important that power be evenly shared. Now, if the MDC controls Home Affairs, it means they will also be able to control the police, who also, up till now, together with the army, have been instrumental in punishing members of the opposition party.
So the real crux of the position is that there has to be power sharing right across the line, not just at the government level.
Absolutely, absolutely. Not just in terms of the departments, but in terms of where real power lies, such as with regard to the police security.
Archbishop Thagali talking to my colleague Emma McCarthy. Caritas Internationalis has launched a $7 million appeal for Zimbabwe to provide urgent humanitarian assistance for over a quarter of a million people facing hunger and death. Caritas says there is an acute humanitarian crisis in Zimbabwe, with 5 million people out of a population of 10 million reliant on food aid to survive. In addition, a cholera outbreak over the last 5 months has now killed more than 3,000 people and infected more than 57,000 others. But let's find out more from somebody actually based in the Zimbabwean capital, Harare, about the humanitarian situation facing the people there. Cornelius Hamadziripi is the director of the Zimbabwean Catholic Development Commission. I began by asking him about the impact of the cholera outbreak there.
The crisis is an entangled web of a number of other issues surrounding it. The cholera and probably the humanitarian crisis that you are seeing is just a symptom of probably the bigger picture. But what I can basically tell you that, yes, the cholera outbreak is still there, and there have been efforts both at the government and other international actors to address those challenges. Though we continue to receive reports from here and there in other parts of the countries where it wasn't being reported. But also it must be understood in the context that even regionally, the other countries, they are also beginning to report, you know, cases of cholera. And the other issue that we also have is still the food security situation hasn't improved. There have been a number of organizations, international agencies that have been providing food, in particular the World Food Program. But we are getting reports that because of the pipeline, their pipeline is almost like drying up, so they have had to cut rations as well. So that calls for other agencies also to supplement the food aid.
Of course, cholera, as we all know, is a waterborne disease. Is it true that everybody in Harare has to boil water because the water is not clean?
Well, yes, it has been encouraged that people actually need to improve their water management systems, so including boiling and such. And of course, due to the other challenges, I think the responsible authority for water management within the city of Harare hasn't been able to provide the necessary chemicals and so. So it has always been advised people that they should, apart from the cholera outbreak, but just as part of the public health hygiene, that people need just to treat their water.
I know that because of the economic crisis, Zimbabwe's health service has all but collapsed. What is the situation like now for somebody who is sick? I mean, can they take their relative to a hospital, or are they likely to find an empty hospital?
Well, over time, there has been a decline in the provision of social services, probably civil service. So you would find most hospitals, we've had brain drains where the skilled workers have left, medicines, drugs, and even equipment, and so forth. So you would find that if one were to fall sick, usually those who would go to public hospitals may not be able to do so. So they have had to rely on the mission hospitals run, for example, like the Catholic Church. We have a number of hospitals throughout the country. So those ones with private funding, they've been able to keep on attending to patients. The other alternative is people, those who have access to, say, to hard currency, of which not many of us are able to do so, are able to access, medical services from, private practitioners. And these ones, they charge either in US dollars or in South African rand and so forth. So if you don't have that kind of money, then you are not able to access that service. So yes, it's true that public hospitals haven't been functioning very well.
You talked about the fact that because the public hospitals and the health service there has largely collapsed, that people who are now sick are all going to the mission hospitals, the ones run by the church. Are they being overwhelmed by this situation?
Oh yes, definitely they are overwhelmed by the situation, because there is the issue of that the public hospitals are not working. The mission hospitals are not many. So, of course, now that you have a huge demand and there are less service providers, so obviously they feel the pressure. And also that in terms of funding, again, they have to depend on private funding, either from international donors or something like that. And given the global financial crisis, they may not be able to raise what they require as resources to run those hospitals. So, yes, definitely they are feeling the pressure.
And are you able to get enough medical supplies and food and water to take care of the patients?
Yes, again, it has been international agencies helping out in terms of provision of the resources. For instance, us as Catholic Development Commission, we have launched an emergency appeal where we are looking at providing food for patients and staff at hospitals as a way of trying to retain them.
It's not just, of course, the health service that is suffering as a result of this economic crisis, but there's widespread hunger throughout Zimbabwe. Just how bad is the hunger situation? Can you give me some figures?
I will just use the WFP estimates, which they are saying that by January, which is this time, they were estimating that about half of the population, which is about 5 million people, would be in need of food. Between now and March, that's the most, I would say, critical point in terms of our agricultural season. So I would say yes, during the most critical period, because one, it's raining, and two, there's still not yet something that they can eat from their fields. So that's when we would need a massive input in terms of food aid as well.
And do you see visible signs that people are starting to get, somewhat thin as a result of not eating enough?
No, I wouldn't say people are getting too thin. I would simply say is people are eating foods that they would not usually eat at this time of the year. For instance, at one point, people were actually relying on some wild fruits to eat, and people would eat some foods that we would not usually eat and so forth. Because there hasn't been any some sort of nutritional surveillance, that shows that this is what exactly has happened.
I was speaking to Cornelius Hamadziripi, director of the Zimbabwean Catholic Development Commission.
That's all from us here at the English programme for today, but we hope you have enjoyed listening to us. We'll be back on the air at the same time tomorrow, so be sure to join us then if you can. And don't forget, you can always find our programmes at the click of a mouse on the internet at www.vaticanradio.org. We'd also love to hear your comments or suggestions, so do send us an email. You're listening to Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.